With few exceptions, Latinos and people of color are represented in mainstream film and television at a level disproportionately low when compared to the complexion of America. The outright absence and confounding simple stereotypes of Latinos in our moving image culture gives a false impression of who we are as a nation and has wide-ranging impacts on our communities, politics, and our basic understanding of one another. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The 2013 book, Almost White, Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood, is writer, director, producer, and actor Rick Najeda's observations and lessons gained over a more than 30-year career working on stage, television, and the big screen. The book is as funny as it is challenging and offers valuable insights into why our media culture fails to accurately portray the diversity of our republic. I'm pleased to welcome back Rick Najeda to the program.
Good morning. Great to be here.
It was fantastic speaking with you last week. This is a huge topic, and so we're carrying it over into a second week. I just want to recap. We left off. You're speaking to the importance of the entertainment industry and the implications it has on how we as a nation understand ourselves and also the political ramifications to the images that we put out and the dearth of people of color, particularly Latinos, as represented in writers' rooms and in front of the camera and behind the camera. I wanted to start by asking you, the subtitle of your book, Almost White, is Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood. That term forced really got my attention. And certainly reading your, what's a bit of a memoir, because it's about your life and thoughts from working in the industry, the sense that if you had your druthers, you'd just love to be working. But part of the story of the book is your awakening to the necessity for you to just not be taking roles. I think it's in the 1980s that you write that you felt like you were living out a lie.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing all those bad guy roles. I was in the movie Red Surf with George Clooney, which Quentin Tarantino called one of his favorite films, which was, I met Quentin, and, you know, he saw Latinologues, my play that went to Broadway, and I hung out with him one night. We were doing tequila shots, and he's a great guy. And I thought to myself, I understand why he loved that movie. It was just so campy and so bad. And I played like a drug lord.
Mm-hmm.
And here I'm a bad drug lord, and George Clooney is the good drug lord. And so I'm like, why? And he goes, well, he's white, so he's the good drug lord. I'm the bad drug lord. So it was just a film, and I was filming it in Compton. We're filming one day, and I hear these shots off set. And I'm like, what? You know, I'm the one shooting, you know, the scene. I go, maybe they're just, you know, the stunt doubles doing some work or something. And I turn around, and I see a guy running, and he's been wounded, and he's bleeding. And there's a guy running after him shooting a gun. So I'm playing a drug lord. So I've got my drug lord outfit on, and I've got a fake gun on with a, you know, with a holster. So I instinctively reach for my gun. He instinctively looks at me with his gun, points it at me. And we just, our eyes met, and I thought his mind must have been, there's a Cuban drug lord in this neighborhood? What the hell's going on? Then he turns and shoots at the other guy. And I sat there and thought, I'm playing a drug lord. He's an actual probably drug lord, you know, obviously. And it's a drug transaction that area was just going bad. And I'm thinking, I'm basically living this bizarre lie, and it's ironic. I'm seeing the world. Mm. The irony just hit me how strange it was, because I was a classical actor. I was raised at, you know, the Old Globe Theater in San Diego. I studied American Conservatory Theater in a master's program. I've done all this work, and here I'm playing a drug lord. So it was a certain degree of going, if I'm going to play a stereotype, I better write that stereotype. And that came from me from, you know, meeting Whoopi Goldberg and working with her in Second City, a special we did, be in charge of your future by writing it, you know, write it. So that was one of those defining moments where you look and you go, I have to write my roles. And so I wrote a play with a group of actors called Latins Anonymous, and it was very popular. And from there, I started writing more and more, and then got a job in Living Color. And I said, you know, I'm writing characters and people that I know, and there's a difference. I mean, one time I remember I'm working on an HBO pilot, and I'm working with a very famous writer, and his name's Saul. And I have a bit where I'm saying, well, we should do this. And he goes, no, Rick, you can't do that. And it was basically a conga player in New York playing the congas in Central Park, and a blonde woman runs by jogging, and he goes, hey, don't run from love, baby, don't run from love. He's flirting with her. And he goes, oh, my God, Rick, you can't have that. You can't have a Puerto Rican yelling at a white woman. You know how terrifying that is? So he's a conguero. He's playing in a band. He's not going to pick up his conga and run after her and attack the woman. It's broad daylight. He's flirting. And he finally was, yeah, you're right. Okay. And he says, you know, you're a really good writer. I go, thank you. And he goes, Saul, have you ever worked with a professional before, a Latino? And then his maid came in right at that moment and brought a cup of coffee. He goes, Mr. Saul, here's your coffee. And he goes, yes, I have, Maria. That's been the professional I've worked with.
Hmm.
And he meant it. He didn't mean it in malice at all. He meant, oh, of course I have. That's the professional I know. And that was indicative of all Hollywood. The professionals they know, even though there's 10 million Latinos, you know, living in California, in Los Angeles, they don't know them. They know them mostly as the servants or busboys or these other roles. So it's easy for them to categorize in that way because that's how they're dealing with them. You know, they're not seeing them as an equal or not seeing them as a professional. They're not seeing those Latinos. And so they perpetrate what they know. That's the problem. So when I bring up a point of going, hey, I'm the Latino professional with you right now writing, they don't know what to do because they go, oh, my God, you know, it's like Planet Apes. Wow, this man speaks.
It's part of the problem, though, that, you know, in the way that they have to categorize people on screen based on their very insulated lives, that, you know, the industry as a whole is based on homogenizing and categorization, where Latinos are such a diverse group and represent a broad spectrum. And almost the medium itself is antithetical to diversity.
Well, it is in some ways. That's just saying, do you want to go for the easy written word or do you want to go for the complex, unique character? And real writers, really great writers, write complex characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, easy writers deal in the world of stereotypes. And that's not a lot of times what Hollywood does because it's just faster. If I sit there and say, here's the scene, I have three Latinos walking in. Describe them. If I'm a white writer, describe me three Latinos, you know, three swarthy-looking dark men enter the room, jet black hair, you know, pointy shoes. You know, it's like...
Not a lawyer, a banker, and a doctor.
Yeah, they're not saying a lawyer, you know, but if I'm writing the role, I'll go, you know, three Latinos, one is a doctor, you know, one can be a gardener, and because I'm going off my life.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke at Harvard. I speak at Stanford, May 8th. I speak at all these different places. And I'm surrounded by plenty of professional Latinos. So it's easy for them to go with the myopic view, and part of it is casting. Casting is quick and fast. And since it is a visual medium, we're just perpetrating the roles we've seen before. You know, you go, angry black man, got it, got that role, bring out angry black man.
Right.
And that's where you lose the complexities of art. Now, if I can hand you a peanut butter sandwich every day, but if I'm truly a chef, I'm going to go, okay, let me add, you know, some banana to that. Let me make the date nut bread. Oh, how about when I crisp it to give a different, unique texture? Oh, let me add this to it. That's what a chef does. You know, that's what an artist does. And that's what, as writers, we should do and encourage us to do. Part of the problem is since there's very few Latinos behind the cameras, a lot of people are free to say whatever they want about Latinos. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm a staff, and I was up for a show writing a sitcom, and the showrunner, I met him, and he thought I was great and all that stuff. And then he came back to me through, you know, channels that knew him. He said, well, why don't you hire Rick? And they said, well, Rick's opinionated. You know, he has his opinions about Latinos. I don't want to be bothered by that. I just want someone who's either a brand new young writer or a girl. In other words, I'm at a higher level. So if I'm in a room with him and he goes, in this scene, I want this to happen. I go, wait a minute, guy. I don't think that's right. Why don't you do it this way? There's someone can actually say to him, no, let's try it this way. And a lot of the people that are showrunners, the way they become showrunners, have huge egos. They don't want a single person telling them any notes at all.
Right.
And the new way of working, in which the way I've worked, has always been collaborative. You know, give me your opinion. If when I wrote In Living Color, the reason it worked for me is that I did as much research on African Americans as I could. I walked in the room, I knew more about African American history and culture than some of the black writers there. And that's just what a good writer does. So if you're going to write about Latinos, research them, understand them, you know, live among the culture, be involved. And that's what you're supposed to do. A lot of times they don't.
So where are the solutions, you think, in the future coming from? Is it that despite the fact that fewer companies own more of the media pie than ever, there's also all sorts of wealth of new media, new ways to reach audiences? Or is it to opt out and just do your own thing and stop trying to get that writer's gig or the actor's gig that's portraying, that's, you know, just fitting that box and checking that box for the stereotypical Latino? Or is it really what you've done? I think the example in your book is that you were forced in many ways to become a writer, to take control of the product and the content that you would then present yourself in.
Well, I mean, I think there's a dual track on everything. You know, it's Hollywood's like a war. You know, attack a war. No one ever goes into a war fully prepared. I mean, normally war is a thrust on people. And I didn't go into this thinking about culture and race would be an issue. I started off as a Shakespearean actor in San Diego. And it's only when they found out I was Latino it all changed. And, you know, instead of me being woe is me minority, I never felt it myself as a victim. I always felt myself as, oh, this is a new challenge for me. Okay. So what I would say to any other person is not to opt out. Try to get that job on a Writers Guild show. Try to get involved in the unions. Try to be a director. And on one thing, that the other part is being entrepreneurial, which is truly the spirit of what Hollywood is.
Right.
Hollywood started off with as one-reelers. You know, basically, the Jews in the garment district made so much money, and they were doing that world, they were unable to get into the white society of the East Coast, you know, and banking and certain things. They couldn't get into it. They were shut out. They were shut out in country clubs and everything else. Hollywood opened up to a large Jewish community, and they went into Hollywood and took over the one-reelers and started making an industry. That's why, you know, people, it's not saying that Hollywood's controlled by Jews. That's an old thing. It's really saying that there are a lot of people who are Jewish because you happen to go out and hire your family. You bring your family in. It's a family business.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing has to happen for Latinos and African-Americans, everyone else. You turn Hollywood into a family business. Make it entrepreneurial. Make alliances with people. You know, the people that probably supported me the most in Hollywood have been many times African-Americans, women, and Jews. Those three groups I've noticed have really always helped me.
Because
and
they could.
They related. They actually related to my situation. I related to theirs. And my writing was, in a lot of ways, fit their mentality. You know, it fit their cause, too. You know, you work with people like, you know, I've worked with Sidney Poitier, I worked with Whoopi Goldberg, I worked with a lot of people. I'm watching their example, you know, their example of don't wait for the job, go ahead and try to create the job. Whoopi Goldberg started doing a one-woman show. It was actually a two-person show. Her partner dropped out. It became a one-person show, and she traveled around to finally, Mike Nichols saw it, because she had done the Second City Improv, and went to her show in New York and said, oh my God, this is incredible. I'm going to get you on Broadway. And that's what happens. You know, even me getting to Broadway was Robin Tate. You know, he sat there. I put the show up at Town Hall. It did very well for one night only. And when everyone said that no Mexican show could ever work on Broadway, they called me Mexican show.
Hmm.
And he thought it was filled with people. And he said, wait a minute, there's something here. And we got on Broadway, and we did 137 performances to it with an extension, which was unheard of the first time. Yet at the same time, there is a lot of prejudice. I mean, the New York Times didn't want to review my show. I was told by my publicist, because they didn't feel comfortable reviewing at night, so you'd only go to a matinee. So the New York Times is reviewing a Sunday matinee. The worst audiences you can do is a Sunday matinee. That's when the New York Times came. And the review was, the audience was in stitches, I just didn't get it. Whereas New York One, who was so much better, they gave this glowing review that saved my show. And I finally met the woman, and I said, why'd you write such a great review? I'm just curious. I'm not saying the show's bad, but I mean, you really got it. And she said, oh, I'm married to a Puerto Rican. White woman married to a Puerto Rican. And that's the future, the mixing of our cultures and people. So find those people that share your vision of what the real America is. Make alliances with them. You know, talk to them. Understand it is a problem and look for ways to help each other out. You know, that's what alliances are about. You know, we need more and more alliances within Hollywood, within ourselves, and to realize it is a problem, and then to demand and support work that is good, and with, you know, your dollars at the box office. But at the same time, as artists, we have to be the best artists and people we can be. It's just going to be more difficult when you're a minority or a woman, according to this, what the Guild reports are. It is difficult, but you can't let that stop you. You know, you just can't. So you have to think, how can I figure out the way to win? That's the objective. How can I figure out the way to work? I have 2 more years as a Writers Guild, under a Writers Guild contract, to get health insurance for life. To be, you know, so I'm like, okay, I got 2 more years to get Writers Guild insurance. That means I better be writing a screenplay whenever I can, look for an opportunity. All those thousand things, that's just human nature. It is going to be tougher because the people that are judging my work tend to be white, young white people. And they're going to read my script about a Latino or whatever, and they're not going to hear the voice, they're not going to get why I'm doing it, and they're not going to be into it. That's not my audience. You know, I once did a show, a TV show, and the president of a network said to me, he goes, my daughter doesn't get your show. And it was getting good ratings. And I said, wait a minute, your daughter, the 15-year-old that goes to a private school? I go, the white 15-year-old child that goes to a private school is not my audience. The other people are the ratings. And it kind of shut him down. Of course, he was angry about it. But the truth was, I was right. So it's, you know, many tracks you have to, many ways to figure out how to win. And it's happening. Robert Rodriguez is an example.
You have persevered and certainly overcome a lot in your life on a lot of fronts, and you're, I know, a mentor to many in the Latino community and all sorts of other communities. I just want to thank you so much for writing the book and being on the program today, and wish you all the best in your endeavors, Rick.
Thank you.
I've been discussing diversity issues in Hollywood with actor, director, producer, and writer Rick Nejeda. Nejeda's 2013 book, Almost White, Forced Confessions of a Latino in Hollywood, charts his path through a show business world almost devoid of people of color. The book is available at most online retailers, and you can learn more about Rick Nejeda and Almost White at ricknejeda.com. Part one of my conversation with Rick Nejeda is available online at ktep.org. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thanks for listening to On Film.